This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Pop Experience, we're back, is a very special episode of Pop Goes to the Couch here on the very feed I just mentioned. Welcome to our show. We're here breaking down the latest episode of WandaVision. I am one of your co-hosts, Andy Atherton, and it's episode 5. It is entitled On a Very Special Episode, and let's get the gang in here and let's get going, because there's a lot to, like we say this every episode, a lot to unpack. This one really... This was, you know, where I think we're living in two worlds now. We're away from it's either going to be in the TV show or in the outside world. No, we're going to have both going on at the same time. We're going to go cut between both. I think that's the way it's going to be the rest of the series. But let's hear what the guys say. First off, let's get him in here. Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean.
Good evening, Andy. I'm looking forward to dropping some shitty theories like thegreatcomicbook.com tonight. So should be coming in hot.
We neither confirm nor deny or endorse that statement, but we're good.
They are the views of me personally. Please don't hold Andy accountable to that.
All kidding aside, Scott Shifley is here.
Andy, it's great to have a full house here tonight.
I see what you did there.
I really hope that, you know, this pod doesn't go through any growing pains, though. All right. Yes. On that note, and rounding out our group is Tim Capel.
Oh, it's good to be back with the family and the ties that bind us this show. So wonderful. Special episode talking about a very special episode. Can't wait.
What would we do, baby, without us? That's what I have to say. All right. So this latest episode dropped this past Friday. You're listening to this on a Tuesday. And let's get to the synopsis and the analysis. Here we go. At the couple's 80s home, Wanda and Vision are trying to get the twins, Tommy and Billy, to sleep. Wanda tries to use her magic to make them sleep, but when Vision goes to the next room to get their binkies, but her magic does not work. The babies spit out the binkies, and Wanda wonders if they need some help. Agnes comes over on her way to Jazzercise and hears babies crying. She offers to help get the twins to sleep, and Vision worries that Agnes might accidentally hurt them. Agnes asks Wanda to take her from the top, and breaks kind of character. Wanda and Vision have no idea what she's talking about. Wanda tells Vision that they should let Agnes give a try, and Vision reluctantly agrees. After they share a little life, I don't know whoever wrote the synopsis, Vision privately asks Wanda what that's all about. Wanda dismisses it as Agnes is being confused and has no idea what Vision is talking about. So, Sean, what do you think of the top of this episode?
Very 80s to start out with the crying babies. And, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say Vision putting the binkies in his ears was a little ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, just a great 80s opening. And then we get that little bit of mystery with what happens with Agnes about, hey, should I take it from the top? And you kind of get that oh shit moment. And Vision, you start to slowly, as each episode goes on, he starts to think through that something's not right. And they don't waste any time getting us to that moment this episode, so I thought it was a pretty solid opening.
Scott, what are your thoughts on the whole, the babies trying to get them to sleep, and Agnes comes over, Jazzercise, very 80s, by the way, right there, and kind of breaks character, I guess.
One thing I loved was, like you said, with the 80s and with Agnes coming over and breaking character, it's like, oh, what's going on, and, you know, this is like you guys said, this wasn't the first time we had seen something like this happen, because, you know, Wanda rewound Vision that one time when he was asking all these questions, and now we get it even more with she's like, take it from the top, like, oh, I just broke, you know. And it's just confusing because Wanda acts like she doesn't know, so it's like, who really is in control? You know, who's the master puppeteer with this? And I think one thing that is crazy is that Wanda's magic doesn't work on her kids, which is concerning, because that means she can't control them like how she can control all the other townsfolk.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes, actually. Tim, what do you think of the opening of the episode?
We got to talk about that incredible opening number, by the way. Mm-hmm. Just continuing to knock it out of the park with the very decade-appropriate sitcom theme songs. This one, it's like super long, way longer than it like needs to be, which all those 80s TV show themes were.
Hey, some of those songs are pretty freaking cool, man.
Yeah, well, they are, but they just kind of keep going and going. And they have lyrics that sort of don't even necessarily relate to the show a lot of times. But this one did. This one, they had some clever touches in it. You know, Nothing Can Faze Us, I think, was in there. But so great. And so overly sappy and sentimental. Like, oh my God, what are we going to watch here? Like, but that they nailed it. They continue to nail it. So I just had to give props to that. Working in a little Family Ties and Full House and Growing Pains, just all wrapped up in the mix there. The house.
Don't forget to mention the clothes too. I forgot to bring up the great clothes of the '80s. In
the clothes were phenomenal. Yeah.
Well, also Vision's haircut.
Mm-hmm. Got kind of the floppy, swoopy hair. Yep.
Yes.
In the shirt. I mean, I
look at old family pants.
Old family photos, and my dad has that same shirt. Like,
sorry,
and a lot of.
I'm
please.
Crap right now. So.
I don't know if you guys noticed that when Vision asked where what happened to what was Monica's name inside?
Geraldine.
Where'd Geraldine go? We've seen Wanda give three different responses. In the different clips.
Oh, that's a good catch. That's a good catch.
So yeah. In the show says, oh, she had to go. And then another one, she didn't belong here. So every time they've shown it, she said something different.
Feels like she doesn't quite have her story straight. And she's also just skirting around the issue. The house has changed to match the decade, of course. We're in more of a, what would you say, Andy? Is this like a Family Ties sort of architecture?
Yeah, it's Family Ties. It's got the stairway. Which is very, it's kind of Full House.
It's got the fireplace. It's definitely,
yeah,
it's definitely from Family Ties.
And the couch looks kind of like Growing Pains with the one blue cushion. So.
Yeah. So, but anyway, this opening already served up quite a bit here, especially with Agnes making an appearance pretty soon in this episode and having that weird exchange where Vision is rather befuddled. She's directly asking you, Wanda, you want a retake there? Like, she's the director. So it's like Agnes knows that this is not going according to script. And she seems to be prompting Wanda to, I don't know, either rewind it or clip it out as she has done on previous occasions. And Wanda's just kind of like, no, keep rolling. And I feel like Wanda knows to some extent now. We're going to get like further, I think, verification of that as the episode progresses. But I think at this stage, Wanda has an awareness that she has a degree of control here. And she sort of, I don't know, I just watching the episode back again, I got the sense that she was playing dumb during mm-hmm. that exchange. And hoping that Vision would just snap back into their reality, but he sort of presses the point, hence this being a very special episode. So
yeah,
good bit to chew on there.
Yeah, he definitely sees the light, so to speak. As we'll get further in the episode with this, but this is the start of it because
mm-hmm.
which I think is funny. I know they probably did this on purpose, but they bicker like. They are in a sitcom show, which I thought was great, but it was still, there were stakes still to it, which is what this whole show has been.
And yeah. I love, and again, back on the clothes, I love Agnes's jazzercise outfit, very becoming of her. So might add her to the train at some point. I'm undecided. So.
with the headband, everything, the leg warmers.
So
we'll
see how that plays out.
Yeah. One thing I hope though, is that we get down the line, like I want to see the shows that like Darcy sees. With the edits, like, you know, like did Darcy and Jimmy and all them, did they see Agnes saying, should we take it again? Or was there maybe an edit that was done in the broadcast?
I think they insinuated or they said that it was edited out. They didn't know what happened.
Yeah, just
they catch it at one point.
Yeah.
They
just
they
a quick cut.
And, And she rolled, because they've been recording this while they watch it. Presumably they're not sitting, maybe they're doing it in shifts, but it's not Darcy sitting there 24/7 watching this, because, I mean, she can't.
Oh, she would.
she probably liked to. She said she was getting invested in the story.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're recording it, and I guess they're watching it back, replaying it. And while they were watching it, quote unquote, live, they were like, hey, what was that? It was the same sort of blip, the same cut that we saw last week. And, you know, she tries to play it back on the tape, and it's just not there. So it did not get recorded. So that does beg the question, what are we seeing versus what they are seeing? Like, are we watching it live as they are, or are we watching it on tape? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And one other thing, too, I didn't notice till I watched the a Nerdist video over the weekend. Matt Shankman, I think that's how it's pronounced, is the director of the series. He was a child actor. Mm-hmm. He was the son on Just the 10 of Us. So
I read
So he's very familiar with 80 sitcoms. So
Just the 10 really of shows. Us. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm. I used to love that show.
Growing Pains spinoff.
Mm-hmm. With Bill Kirchenbauer.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the high school gym teacher.
And Heather Landskamp from Nightmare on Elm Street.
And Jamie Luner from the Meryl Streep.
Yeah,
I know.
Jamie
Lexi.
And I also liked Brooke Thies. She was in one of the. It was one of the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I know.
Scott's
that.
Like, what the hell are you people talking about? I have no idea.
I know what Nightmare on Elm Street is. I didn't realize that like, Growing Pains had any spinoffs, though.
Yeah.
I didn't know Just the 10 of Us was a. I mean, I might have and forgot it. Who knows? But was that show like a Brady Bunch situation where.
Yes.
Okay. No, so they had 10 kids. No, legit.
Yeah, they had 10 kids, and majority of them were a lot of girls.
Oh, so they just had a shitload of kids. Okay.
Yeah, they
just a lot of fornicating.
Wow.
Popping them out.
but no, I guess the whole point of it is, I think what this scene in the opening or thereabouts implies is that depending on the type of edit we see, I think that tips off whether we're seeing it live or on tape. You know what I mean? Where... like, we actually see Agnes saying, you want to redo that? And presumably, if Wanda had said yes, there'd be, like, a cut there. So I don't know if the sword folks saw the same thing that we did there.
Sword might have seen what you saw. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so...
Maybe Wanda changed that in post-production, you know?
Maybe. All right, so the twins stop crying and disappear from their cribs. Billy and Tommy are behind them. They're now 5 years old. Agnes is drinking some sort of dark liquor and comments that nobody can control children. Wanda and Vision pick up their sons and hold them. That's when we get the open with the disturbing Vision child. So what do you think of the age up that fast, Scott? And then we get to, and we see, like, you know, we have the Full House picnic and all the other fun stuff in the open. Anything we haven't said really about the open yet as well?
Not going to lie, those kids look a little creepy. They look like the twins from The Shining, and I was a little concerned. And I was also concerning how Wanda and Vision just rolled with it, like it was perfectly normal. But to be honest, we saw her give birth within 18 hours of becoming pregnant. And I do think it's interesting that Agnes did say no one can control the children. As we saw at the beginning of the episode, Wanda couldn't even control them, and she controls everything in this town that she's concocted. But I definitely think that's going to lead to something. And I love the opening. And you say it's creepy with baby Vision. I thought it was kind of adorable because they're just going full 80s trope, and I enjoyed it.
Tim, what do you think of the age up and that fact that, you know, it happened in front of Agnes as well?
Right. That this happened in Agnes's presence seems significant. Almost like, did she want this to happen? Was she planning on that to happen? Was it unintended? I don't know. She always seems to show up at just the right time when something's needed. Right. Just as Wanda has a degree of awareness here, so does Agnes, but they just seem to be on very different pages. And with the kids aging up and just the reaction that Wanda and Vision have. I mean, to some degree, they are used to it. I mean, given the accelerated birth and everything of their twins, but Agnes is, you know, just kind of chill about it. And they're also being rather, you know, at least Wanda is being rather nonchalant and the display of her abilities and Agnes's presence also, as we're going to see as this episode progresses. So suffice to say, the cracks are starting to show and the kids continuing to age up as they do. It really like plays into that because there's just no way you can hand wave something to that degree.
Sean, what do you think of the quick age up to five?
A mix of both. I like what Scott said about the creepy Shining twins because that's what they reminded me of. That was very, very creepy. We could probably work in some Rosemary's Baby into that, Tim. I was waiting for some of that.
No, the baby. They're growing so fast. I'm growing with babies. They need nourishment.
So I got dark my Rosemary's Baby. That's what I wanted. All right. But yeah, you know, I think to Tim's point, it's pretty pivotal that, you know, she's just flagrantly doing this in front of Agnes now, and Agnes just plays it off. I think Agnes tipped her head a little bit so she knows what's going on in our last episode with the when they were outside talking to each other before they expelled Geraldine. But yeah, and then it seemed like between her and Vision, it just seems like no big deal. I mean, Vision still seems taken aback a little bit, but he just continues to play along and. It seems like this is pretty significant, especially on the Agnes front. Not tipping on who she is, but there's definitely something there with Agnes that long-term they're slow building to. So I'm very curious to see where this goes.
Yeah, I don't think Wanda didn't control the age up. So it's happening whether Wanda wants it in front of people, whether Wanda wants it to or not, though.
And her magic doesn't work on them. And that's the other key in this is like, and I think Tim said it, the magic doesn't work on the babies, but Agnes was able to get them to stop crying. There's definitely a higher level. I mean, we'll get into it later. There's definitely a higher level behind the scenes, something going on.
So. Oh, yeah. All right. So back outside Westview, though, the S.W.O.R.D. medical team inspects Monica, and all she remembers is a feeling of hopelessness and grief keeping her down while inside the sitcom reality. Jimmy and Darcy check on her and give her a uniform, tell her that there's a briefing at 10. The medtech reports that Monica's scans are blank and that she'll need to do another blood draw. Monica is sick of being tested and says that they're done there and goes to get dressed. At the briefing, Hayward tells the attendees that they're now first-person information from inside the anomaly. He says that Wanda is the victimizer and Jimmy reviews her history. Wanda and her brother lost their parents in a bombing in Sokovia and due to experimentation by Hydra. And with the Mind Stone, Wanda gained telepathic and telekinetic abilities. Hayward wants to talk strategy and suggests that Wanda is a terrorist. Monica disagrees, believing that it is not a premeditated act of aggression. 9 days ago, Wanda invaded the S.W.O.R.D. facility and took Vision's corpse and resurrected it. Darcy wonders what happens when Vision will happen when Vision learns the truth about his resurrection. So a lot happens here. I've heard some theories as well, and also reminded me Darcy is like a surrogate for my girlfriend who uses the term big fan a lot, and it really popped me. But Tim, what did you think here? Because Hayward is getting even more and more into this guy's an asshole. He's up to no good. He's, you know, messing. Something's going on that he's not telling us. And I think Monica is starting to pick up on that as well as Jimmy and Darcy. But Tim, what do you think of this part when we, you know, they inspect Monica and we get the briefing?
Yeah, good bit going on here. And this is, as of this episode, I think we are now seeing what I thought would happen with this show and hoped would happen is where we get more of a split in the episode between time in the sitcom reality and time in the real world. And by the way, we should mention this episode a little bit longer than those previous, about 10 minutes longer. You know, I didn't do the math. I do wonder if you added up all of the time that we see with Wanda and Vision, if it comes out to like 22 minutes of a sitcom. I don't know. It's entirely conceivable.
That would be amazing if it did.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it feels about right. I don't know if it's truly a 50-50 split here, but I mean, we have established our basically audience surrogate characters and have grown rather fond of, I mean, I've grown rather fond of Monica at this stage. Glad to see that she's apparently none the worse for wear for her experience in WandaVision. But what about those test results, guys? A little bit suspect, right? And she sort of just brushes those off. She doesn't seem particularly surprised, or if she was, maybe she just wanted to get back to work. I don't know. That remains to be seen. As far as this Tyler Hayward guy, yeah, he seems like a bit of a dick. Although, I don't know. I sort of hope that they don't go the cliched route of just making him like the corrupt bureaucrat authority figure, just because I think that this universe and even the Marvel shows, like the old Netflix shows, kind of would lean on that a little too much. Think of all like the so many bad cops and Daredevil and like Jessica Jones. And I mean, I get it. It's a trope. It's not the worst thing in the world. It wouldn't like break the show for me or anything. It's just, I hope there's maybe more depth to him than he's just her asshole boss. Maybe he's got an ulterior motive. Maybe he knows more than he's letting on. But I just hope there's more to him than, than meets the eye here. So on that note, we get the, I guess the break-in of Wanda that happened, what does he say, 9 days ago at S.W.O.R.D. headquarters?
9 days after the snap.
After the, after everyone returned, presumably. So at that point, I guess Monica is still sort of getting her bearings, right? After coming back from the snap. It's still a few weeks before she goes back to work. But I don't know. It's just sort of weird that she wouldn't have that information in advance. It's also sort of coincidental that that's connected to the, to her first case back that she's assigned to, right? That this thing happened, a big break-in, the place that she works. And the idea anyway is to keep her grounded, to keep her away from situations like this. I mean, that's the sense I got anyway. So I don't know. I just feel like maybe Hayward or the S.W.O.R.D. superiors are withholding some information here. We haven't gotten the full story, I don't think, but a nice nod to the comics, certainly, where we see Vision disassembled, basically in parts, in shambles around the lab. What were they doing to him? We are told it's in direct violation of his will, which I don't know why Jimmy Woo would know what Vision's final wishes were, but I don't know. It's probably just a bit of, you know, exposition dump there. It was just weird that, how does he even know that Vision had a, like, that kind of took me out of it slightly, but anyway, I like that nod to the comics, seeing Vision all pulled apart. And, I guess, you know, Wanda makes off with him. So suggests that the Vision we're seeing, like, must be his actual body, his corpse in some.
Well, that's
form
what
or
I
fashion.
Was wondering. Is he, like, actually, did she actually bring him back to life and bring his body back together? But because
did
then you go to the last episode where you see the dead Vision like shell. So I'm really curious about what really is happening here. That's one of my questions.
And, well, and they
I have
also
an idea about that. Yeah,
I'd love to hear your idea. That's why I brought it up. But go ahead, Scott.
They also said, like, how is Vision alive without the Mind Stone?
Right.
Correct.
Right. Yeah, that's in there too.
And Hayward says that she broke the Sokovia Accords, which, correct me if I'm wrong, aren't they breaking the Sokovia Accords, having him apart and doing whatever they're doing? Like, if you're following the Sokovia Accords, you put him in like a bag or a box and you throw him in a drawer and that's it, you're done.
Well, he is dead and he's a robot, so I don't know. Are they breaking the Accords?
I have a theory that they were, whatever they were doing was, I don't know, part of me wants to give S.W.O.R.D. the benefit of the doubt and say that they didn't have any malicious intent to turn him into a weapon, which is what kind of Darcy and Jimmy and Monica are speculating. I think they were trying to fix him. Whether that would restore his, you know, consciousness or personality is another question, but I think they were trying to see if there was anything they could do to, like, bring him back, even before Wanda got involved, is my theory. One of my theories, anyway. And then Wanda, you know, kind of blew that all to shit. Just depends on how far they got, maybe. But yeah, I think, she, you know, she made off with his remains, reassembled them with her powers. And we're going to get into more of the mechanics of how this environment functions. So I guess I'll save my thoughts on what the deal is with Vision until once we get there. I mean, I've been talking long enough about this this portion.
All right. Sean, what do you think of the you know, the Monica, we get her kind of caught up, we see her labs, and we get the little briefing.
Yeah, so here's one of my comicbook.com shit take drops that I'm going to do, that piece of shit site. Anyway, here's big my first fan, huh? I am a big fan of the site, cuz sometimes it drops some good stuff, but man, they'll give you one nugget and then have like 20 postings on just pure shit that just makes you – it's like an acquire of the comic book world. It's very funny. But anyway.
Quantent. It's quantent. You know, you've got to get it out there.
Yes. I will say this. I definitely think there's something with Hayward. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm wondering if it ties into who the big bad of this show ends up being. And this is somebody on the outside world he might have going on. I don't know if there's just something there about him that doesn't resonate in him. But I guess it doesn't really make a lot of sense that if he wasn't on it, I mean, I guess why would he want her to be like this public enemy terrorist? And then, so a lot of it doesn't make sense, but there's definitely something there I don't trust about him. And I really hope they're not going around with S.W.O.R.D. that they did with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the other movies, because we don't need to clean like two organizations going to shit. Right. We don't need that trippy story. So I don't think they will. I loved just one of two great Wanda scenes for me, that I love her breaking in and giving those shits and just showing her power and obliterating, just breaking in. And there's another scene that'll come up later that firmly puts her ahead on the train for me, coming up later tonight. That just makes her blow ahead of the train for me. So I love that scene. Tim, I'm like you. I like the scene with Vision kind of pulled apart, which comes from a West Coast Avengers storyline, not really an Avengers storyline, but we've talked about the West Coast Avengers a lot. And Vision and Wanda were more predominant, it seems, in that series. And that's where they pulled that scene from, because it was the same exact scene. So really good nugget there that they did that. This is really good stuff. And that's my curious now is, like, I keep thinking about the dead shell of Vision in that last episode, and then her stealing this corpse, and what Vision are we actually seeing inside the Hex, which, by the way, I love the name, the Hex. I think it's great. So it's
catching on.
You know what? That reminds me. Did I say this last week when I referred to what we saw in the opening credits as pentagons, because I forgot what hexagons are, apparently. I hated myself for a week after that, so just those
retract your pentagonal statements and replace them with hexagons.
I do know the difference between pentagrams and pentagons. I'm gonna really
five-sided things and
step in it again. Pentagons and hexagons. I know the difference, but I didn't at the time because I am, above all else, an idiot. So,
so again, I like the Hex. Darcy, you know, I if I had her in front of me, I would tell her I'm a big fan of hers too, because I am a big fan of Darcy's for many numerous reasons. So, this is just good stuff. And the Monica scene with the X-rays and everything is probably leading us to somewhere along the line. And here's my theory on Hayward. So Hayward has been in charge of S.W.O.R.D. since Monica's mother's death. Is that the way I understand it?
Yeah.
I think there's a tie in there with something. Did he have something to do with her death? But then it's going to shatter another theory I have coming up a little bit later. So, yeah, so a whole lot of things are going on in my mind right now. So,
yeah, I have some thoughts as well. But we'll get to Scott, though, about this part before we move on.
All right. It's a lot. So I'm going to try to hit it as quick as I can. I do think And we're only like 5 minutes into the actual show. It's amazing how much information is dumped on us there. But this, like with Monica being inspected and it coming back blank, Tim alluded to it earlier. That is very interesting. We'll have to see if that goes anywhere else. Just be something to look out for. I don't think Hayward is bad. I think he's more like a Thunderbolt Patterson where he's just a dick. I mean, not Thunder.
Thunderbolt yeah. Ross.
Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, Thunderbolt Ross.
Nice,
Thunderbolt
Patterson. Nice rock and roll reference there on Thunderbolt
yeah,
Patterson.
Sorry.
Wow.
But yeah, I think he's just like Thunderbolt Ross and just a dick and like holds his duty up and doesn't think like it's no like shades of gray. It's just black and white. I don't think he's bad per se. I just think he's an asshole. And I mean, we're supposed to cheer for Wanda because we know deep down she may be a good guy, but she does some things in this episode that we'll get to that you can see why they think she's, I mean, she took a town hostage and then she does something later in this episode where we're like, yeah, I can see why these people are thinking like that. So I don't think he's bad. I just think we knew he was going to be a dick. And like Tim said, we're predisposed in these Marvel shows, like government agencies we're not supposed to trust. I mean, hell, S.H.I.E.L.D. was infiltrated by Hydra mm-hmm. since World War II. So it's just something we have to look out for.
Mm-hmm. That is a valid point. Like what he does or what he tries later in this episode, he's not completely out of line, honestly.
No, you're right.
It's not very smart, but to give it a try, like I guess I could kind of see his perspective, mm-hmm. given everything that had just happened.
And one thing that I did think was funny, and then we can move on, Andy, was like when Jimmy was given the like the rundown of her, he's like, oh, she doesn't have no code name or anything. And then I got to thinking, I was like, did they ever call her Scarlet Witch? Or is that just something we've been calling?
No, they haven't.
Because we're comic book nerds. So.
Mm-hmm. And now she says, Hayward is a, Darcy's about to call him a dick, basically, and he's a terrorist.
I like that.
Nice little cut there. One thing about this, there's been some the editors on this series have been, oh my God, this is some of the best edited, TV, movie, anything I've ever seen. There is some great editing going on these. All right, so back in the sitcom reality, Tommy and Billy wash a dog in the sink. Wanda comes in, notices that something is wrong. The dog barks, and she finds the dog right there. The twins ask if they can keep it. Wanda confirms the dog has no collar. She points out that dogs are a lot of responsibility. Vision comes in wearing his human face because he had a hunch someone might come over. Agnes comes in the back door with a doghouse, as Vision remarks that, which has exactly the thing we might need at that moment in time. The dog shorts out an electrical plug, and Agnes suggests that they name it Sparky. Wanda agrees and conjured up a collar and tags for Sparky. He wonders why Wanda made no effort to conceal magic from Agnes. Wanda doesn't see the problem, pointing out that Agnes probably didn't even notice. Vision is shocked that they disagree and wonders what Wanda isn't telling him. Wanda tells the twins that she and Vision don't think they're ready to care for a dog until age 10. The boys smile at each other and grow from age 5 to 10. Agnes doesn't even notice. So, Sean, Vision is starting to, start to wonder about Agnes. And then we get another age up all of a sudden. But those poor 5-year-old, twin actors were only in the show for about 3 minutes. So what'd you think of this scene?
Well, they got their moment in the sun, and this is where I need another Rosemary's Baby from Tim, if you could.
Oh, such a growing boy. Yeah, they come along so nicely, a baby.
So again,
I apologize to anyone who really hates that, because I'm sure there are
listeners who are about done. How do you hate it? And it's fine. So, yeah, they age 10 years. I'm telling you, there's something evil in these kids, man. And Wanda doesn't seem to have any control of them whatsoever. I think the big one here is Vision really, Vision just calls it out. Well, someone's going to walk through the door and have exactly what required, and boom, there's Agnes again. She came in earlier when they needed her to take care of the kids and rock them to sleep and get them to stop crying. Now she's here with the doghouse. So Agnes is fully entrenched in what is happening and all this stuff at this point. And Vision just slowly unraveling. And they don't disagree ever. So it's kind of a big deal for Vision. Like, I don't understand why we would disagree. We've always had this loving relationship, and now he's starting to he's starting to question a lot of things, and it just that's one of the big things in this whole entire episode. The dog, well, of course, you can't have an 80s sitcom without some random animal that the kids want to bring in and wash in the sink, and I love that. Oh, you have to be 10 to take care of the dog, and oh, now we're 10, and now we have a dog. So some really, like I said, it's like every scene we talk about, every 5 minutes, there's so much and so much layer that's happening. So, yeah, a lot of big stuff in this.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Scott.
Yeah, as Tom, as Sean said, with the with like the dog trope that like it was seen in every show. I can think back like, oh, they get a pet for one episode, then it's never thought of again. But this is what I wondered: who created the animal? Because Wanda clearly didn't want them to create the animal. Do you think the boys created it themselves because they wanted something else to play with? Because, I mean, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, Vision says that there's no other children in the neighborhood, so they have no one to play with but themselves, So do you think they created, like, I want to know where the dog came from, because she obviously doesn't want it or anything. And then Agnes coming around, you know, she's always just happens to be there and happens to have what they need. It started in the first episode where she helped Wanda cook the dinner for the Hearts, and now she's has a perfect dog, you know, a dog bed for the dog, and like no doesn't even bat an eye when the kids go from 5 to 10 in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Tim, what's going on here?
That's a great question. Where did the dog come from? That's something I didn't even think of. I just kind of took it for granted, I guess. But nothing, we know that nothing exists in this world but for the will of Wanda, right? So if she didn't conjure the dog, then who did? We haven't seen any other animals, really, any other pets. I mean, is this a dog that wandered into to the bubble? I don't think.
Oh,
it's
God. That would be terrible.
It's simple. You know, what effect would this thing have on animals? Like, I don't think that's what it is at all. Like, it's why would they go there? So it's like, did the kids create the dog? Do they have abilities of their own? Could be. Notable, maybe, that the twins are not identical. I don't know if that mattered, but it's something that I didn't realize until this episode, where, you know, we see them as little kids, and it's like, okay, clearly these are not identical twins. And casting, or, you know, by design within the show, it seems like they age up and they, you know, continue to look different. Something else I'll point out, and I don't think is significant, but may just be an Easter egg or a nod to something, is, and I'm looking at it right now as I play the episode back, there is a tiger statuette that is sort of inescapable on their kitchen table that is like in the center of the frame in many, many shots. Like, you can't really miss it, and it just feels like they're drawing attention to it. It's a minor detail, probably not going to amount to anything, but it's the second of two times there's like tiger imagery. Mm-hmm.
And I
this
think
episode.
Agnes makes a tiger comment too.
She did.
Yes,
yeah,
she earlier. Does. And she then you said, see it in the dining room. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, she said that Ralph can't tame this tiger, talking about her, you know, unseen husband.
Mephisto.
Yeah, which.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, I guess where I'm going with that is like tigers. What about it? What a cat? You know, you think of cats and the occult, and me being the geek that I am, I thought of Patsy Walker, Hellcat, who was married to Damon Hellstrom. So I know I'm sounding like a comic book DP. Right.
See, and there's another one. Hog. I think it's Hog. It's somebody tied to Doctor Strange, and I can't remember what their name is. But they took the form of a tiger, and I know Doctor Strange is in these multiverse movies. What are they called? Hoggith or something like that? I'd have to go back and reference it, but I know there's another tiger tie-in besides Patsy.
Okay, well, yeah. That may be even more significant then. Have to look into that one. But who's, you know, I mentioned Damon Hellstrom, well, known as the son of Satan. Like, come on. we've seen Hellcat and Damon Hellstrom as different characters in different forms in other Marvel-based shows already. So I'm not saying
Hellstrom had his own TV show.
He did, yeah. So, and and Patsy was Trish.
Yep.
And Jessica Jones. So I'm not saying like it's them. It's just maybe there's a reference to something demonic, hellish, devilish, if you will. So it just, I don't know, that jumped out at me. I'll have to look into that, the Doctor Strange connection, maybe.
I was thinking about it, because I know Doctor Strange, in the end, this is supposed to tie to that multiverse stuff, so I have to go back and look at some more myself, but I recall it being something there with a tiger.
Okay.
And one thing that I've heard is, if you look at Billy and Tommy, that they're wearing the colors of what their uniforms will be when they, when they grow up to be Wiccan and Speed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, those characters. I've read that too. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Lots going on. So back at the sword encampment outside of town, Darcy tells Monica and Jimmy that the twins have aged to 10. Monica wants to go in with shielding power against mental effects, and Darcy and Jimmy note that Wanda is playing more power, manipulating the sitcom reality than anything she's done in the past, where Jimmy mentions that she could have taken out Thanos if on her own, if he hadn't instituted a blitz. And I mean, nobody else came close except for the Captain Marvel came close. And Monica seems to change a little bit. We're not talking about her. So there's something going on there. There's something that's going to tie into that as well. Also, if you notice on the wall, they've identified more people. The mailman, who people have suspected was up to something, is actually just another townsperson. But then Monica examines the photo of reality, and they go to the lab to check the clothing that Monica's wearing is Geraldine. Monica shoots the clothing with Jimmy's gun, and the clothing deflects the bullets. She confirms that the clothing is 87% Kevlar, and she was wearing a Kevlar vest when she went to Westview. Monica figures that Wanda is rewriting reality and wonders what happens if they send something that requires no change. Back inside, the Hack's Vision is working at his job at Computational Services, setting up his new Commodore computer. A communique comes in from Sword via an email, and all the workers in the office recite it in chorus. Only Vision notices anything unusual, and when he touches the computer, it glows. Vision touches Norm, and he glows briefly as well, and then begs Vision to help him and panics. He tells Vision to stop Wanda. She's in his head. Vision touches Norm's head again, and he reverts to normal. All right, Scott, so you're up. What's going on here? What's, with the age up, and then, Norm breaks out for a moment. What do you think?
The age up, yeah, definitely is pretty terrifying, because those kids scare me, and they should scare everyone, probably. The Captain Marvel moment was a little interesting, because she definitely showed a face, and I can't remember if it was discussed on here last week or I read it, but it was said that they think that maybe Captain Marvel gave her mom cancer somehow from just being near her.
Yeah, that's good. That was one of my theories I said in our chat, but I'll elaborate on that later.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. Sorry. All right. Yeah.
No, you're good.
Yeah,
that came from me.
I couldn't remember. I think it came from comicbook.com.
probably.
We like to cite our sources here.
Yes.
There it is. New rock stars. There you go.
sorry, Sean. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. And she definitely, when she's Monica's talking about her plan with Darcy, she says she knows a neurophysicist, I believe, was the terminology, and that has a lot of people thinking it's Reed Richards from the Fantastic Four. So that might be a little Easter egg to look out for as well. And the clothing part was interesting, because, that shows how Wanda's remaking the reality when you go in, which we've already seen with the clothes, but also it, she can be, that's like a full bulletproof vest on that she can go back if she wears it. And I will say, when the whole minions pretty much just read the email that Vision reads, that was one of the creepier parts in the episode. They were able to get that in sync with unison and everything. And then we see Norm, where Vision like unlocks him for a couple of minutes, and like Norm's freaking out. And one thing that has been noticed, it was noticed with Monica and with Norm is that there's a bunch of grief and sadness that Wanda has. So it's like she's just going through the phases of grief right now. With, like, she hasn't accepted it yet. She's doing the bargaining, which I think might be important if there's a certain someone that Sean and Tim believes is behind all this. But, like, that's what made me feel really bad for Wanda. It just happened to be that all these innocent people are getting hurt.
Yeah. One thing I did see online was that somebody has said in the Spanish subtitles that when she refers to it a physicist, it's in the female version. So one theory is that it could be the little girl, the little Skrull girl, I guess, who was in Captain Marvel, same age as her, could have grown up to become an astrophysicist. That's what the working theory is that for some people. Hmm. But Tim, what do you think of this part where, you know, we get the they notice the age up of the twins and we the little plan starts to come together and Norm breaks out for a moment.
Oh, boy. Okay. Scott brought up the issue of grief and loss, which I think is a great jumping off point for this segment of the show, and sort of dovetails into something I've been thinking about, which is why Monica was drawn to this phenomenon. She seemed compelled to interact with, the warp around Westview and was then pulled into it. I almost think this thing is powered by or feeding off of people's grief and, you know, just feelings of sadness or longing, which, I mean, Monica is going through a lot of that with just coming back from the snap and her mom. And if that's true, then it makes you wonder if there is something unique about this town of Westview that places it at the epicenter. I don't think that it was just chosen at random. Like, maybe what was this community hit disproportionately hard by the snap? Maybe did we have like a lot more people getting snapped there than in other places for, you know, whatever reason, leaving a lot of lost and depressed survivors behind? Maybe that's sort of my working theory there. Maybe. But yeah, I kind of put some more thought to that, because when Norm comes out of his trance, like he talks about being in pain. And it's not clear exactly whether that's physical pain or mental, emotional pain or, you know, combination of the two, perhaps. But it certainly seems very significant. Like there's a reason for that, that he's not just confused. He's not just in a fugue state and asking what's going on. Like he's very much distressed and traumatized by this experience. And it's such an unsettling, just creepy scene. Like it really gets under your skin and honestly, in some ways makes you lose a bit of sympathy for Wanda. Cause you're like, wait, if this is all her, as Monica said at the end of our last episode, is she consciously doing this to people? And you don't want to think that of this person you've come to, you know, really love as a superhero and a kind of a pillar of this Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I don't want it to be her. Like I don't want her to be cognizant of the fact that she's doing this to people. That's why I'm like, there has to be more to it. Cause I can't see them, you know, just outright villainizing one of their characters in such a fashion. There must be a twist coming. More conversation in the sword compound, and one of those exchanges I thought was interesting, where they're talking about Wanda's powers and how she's seemingly so much more powerful here in this world of WandaVision than anything that she's displayed previously. And they talk about, well, actually, she probably could have taken out Thanos on her own. So they're like, maybe not as, I don't know. It almost felt like setting up the audience to not be as surprised that she's able to do this as we maybe are. and they said, you know, that's second only to Captain Marvel. By the way, Monica has a weird reaction to the invoking of Captain Marvel's name. Like, she seems a little, I don't know, displeased. And there may be various reasons for that also that I'm not sure if I want to get into yet. I know Sean has has some dark thoughts about that.
My comicbook.com theory.
Okay. Theory coming up. Very good. So I'll let that lie, I suppose. The thing with the Kevlar, establishing that, like, the fabric of this reality, this world, it is quite physical. It's real. All the stuff actually exists, which, I don't know, I didn't really think that was in question. Like, I couldn't see this all, like, the house and everything just being an illusion that Wanda was creating. Like, we've seen people interact with their physical environment in this world, so I knew it was real in some, to some extent. But I mean, this episode basically confirms that material created or changed in the reality of WandaVision continues to exist outside of it. Like, that same outfit that Geraldine's clothing became remained so when she was retrieved, and it was still like the Kevlar that she entered the warp wearing. So it's just reconfigured, I guess, at the end of the day. So that's kind of what I'm feeling like Wanda did with Vision, just put him back together and is basically puppeteering him, which sounds really gross. But I really think that's what it is. And his consciousness perhaps is just like maybe an echo of something that was there. And he's not so much resurrected and alive as he is just sort of reanimated, like a zombie. I also think that some of the arguments that they are going to end up having is sort of Wanda arguing with herself, where a lot of his personality and a lot of his doubts throughout this episode are really her doubts just being projected through him, I think. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll go ahead and just lay that out there. That's where I think we are with Vision. I don't think he's nearly as independent or autonomous as he seems. I think a lot of this, we're just seeing him through her, really.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Tim laying down some big stuff there, and a lot of it makes a lot of sense. But I'll go back to a couple theories. So Tim brought up my theory on the whole Captain Marvel thing. I did love that they did recognize how powerful Wanda is, and I love how Tim did bring up that we definitely didn't see that in the films, because now we are. She is considered one of the most powerful heroes in the comics, along with Captain Marvel as well. So I'm glad they referenced that. I do think I don't know if Captain Marvel necessarily gave her mom cancer. Well, here's what I think. I think, so if you go back to the real Captain Marvel, I think I referenced this on the last show. He got cancer from a mission and some interaction with some nuclear villain, if you recall. I don't remember.
Comics. You talk about, yeah, comics.
Yeah.
The original comics.
Captain, yeah, the original comics, Captain Marvel, the male version of Captain Marvel, died from cancer in a pretty, yes, famous storyline after being exposed to a villain that gave him radiation. My theory is maybe, as a callback, I would bet maybe Captain Marvel and Monica's mom went into a mission together, and there was some kind of exposure on that mission that Captain Marvel put her in danger, where maybe her mom got sick, because I don't think, if I recall, Monica doesn't recall her mom having cancer. She just said, hey, your mom died of cancer. So maybe she got ill, maybe she got sick, and she was sick prior to the snap, and maybe it was from something that happened with Captain. That's where I'm going with it. I think there's a correlation there between the mother and Captain Marvel and why Monica doesn't like her.
She knew, but that doesn't blow up your theory. She knew that her mom had cancer, was in the hospital to have surgery.
Or her mom was sick or something.
Her mom was sick and going to have surgery, and that she came through it okay, basically.
Yeah, so,
but
so that's my
revelation, the big slap in the face was it came back in the intervening years when Monica was gone.
So that's my comicbook.com theory on this situation. So, and I'll leave it at that and see how that plays out. I do like that reference. I do like like we brought up Bill and Tommy. I won't go too much into that. You brought up the bulletproof Kevlar. The one thing I do want to talk about is that haunting scene with Vision and what's his name in the office? What was his
Norm.
Name?
Norm.
Oh, that was so haunting. And reading that email and then just seeing the pure look of horror on Norm's face. And I like how Tim brought up, is this something that Monica's doing? And is it something about, is it a pain? Is it loss? And she has pain and loss. And then there's a scene that's coming up that deals with pain and loss. You don't know what Norm's going through. So I like Tim's theory around that. And I didn't really think about that till he brought it up. So damn you, Tim, for making me think through that. But yeah, just good stuff. And this continues just to be a breakthrough episode on what are the theories, what's really happening, and just good shit across the board.
Mm-hmm. All right. So at home, Billy is teaching Sparky tricks as Tommy and Wanda look on. When the twins want to show Vision, Wanda says her husband's at work, and they point out that it's Saturday. Wanda says that there was an emergency at the office and Vision went in to deal with it. She tells him that Vision needed a distraction because the two of them weren't on the same page. However, Wanda assures him that family is forever. Tommy asks Wanda if she had a brother, and she says she does, and he's far away. Sparky then goes to the front door scared. Wanda goes to the door and opens it. Sparky runs out. The boys run out after Sparky. Back outside, the Hex Monica pilots a 80s drone over a Westview. When it comes in, spots Wanda's home. Wanda is framing the drone out of the show, and Monica calls Wanda through the drone. Wanda's eyes glow red, and Hayward tells another tech to take the shot, even though Monica is not aware the drone is armed. The signal from the drone cuts out, and a breach alarm goes off. Everyone goes to the barrier, and Wanda comes out carrying the drone that she destroyed. She throws the drone at their feet and tells them that they should stay out of her home, and if they don't bother her, she won't bother them. Hayward points out that she's taken an entire town hostage. Monica says that Wanda is the one in control. Wanda recognizes Monica and summons a hex bolt. Monica says that she didn't know the drone was armed, and Wanda brought someone she knew was a SWORD agent into her home. She points out that Wanda trusted her enough to deliver her babies and asks what she wants. Wanda tells Monica that she has what she wants and no one will ever take it from her again. She controls the soldiers into aiming their guns at Hayward and goes back into Westview. When she leaves, the soldiers lower their gun and free her of her control. So this is probably the best part of the episode, in my opinion. I'm sure you guys will share a sentiment. Tim, what do you think of this where, you know, Hayward, you know, he kind of, deceives, I guess is the right word, Monica, and thinking mm-hmm. that she's just going in there for some, you know, surveillance and maybe, you know, negotiations and realizing that he wants to take out Wanda. You know, he wants to not, you know, render her, you know, incapacitated, I guess. And then Wanda, like, you know, breaks out, the accent's back, the outfit's back, and she's not putting up with their bullshit, basically. Although, you know, she clearly does not trust Hayward, and she does, she won't admit it, trust Monica. So what do you think of this scene?
Big turning point in the episode. Turning point in the show as a whole, quite honestly, because this is the first confirmation we've gotten that Wanda is fully cognizant that there's a world outside of Westview / WandaVision, and she marches right up to it in pretty fabulous fashion, if I do say so. That was a like crowning moment of badass for this character. And again, it's just hard to see her in this light and think that this is a hero. Somebody who's obviously going through a real struggle with, you know, her grieving for, you know, her parents, her brother, her fiance, essentially, not to mention everyone else lost in the snap, you know, she, including the 5 years of her own life. going through a lot, you know, but you kind of have to stop short and say, well, I mean, an Avenger, someone with the power that she has, cannot visit her own issues on other people. And if that's what she's done, then gosh, that makes her quite a different character. So at this point in the episode, I'm kind of like not necessarily liking the implication. But that's going to kind of change towards the end. So yeah, big, big stuff here. And it's also, like I was saying with Hayward, maybe he is kind of just that dickish authority figure. He has no ill intent really, because like if he had just taken that shot and essentially killed her on the spot, maybe this all goes away. This all ends and the residents of Westview can resume their lives. Like, is that the worst outcome in the world, given how far this thing has gotten away from everybody? Maybe not. So, yeah, I mean, I can see his point of view, but I don't know. This just gave you a lot to really consider. Like, what are the intentions of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for this character, like in the long term, and you know, just what does it mean for the show itself, for Wanda to, you know, break bad like this essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sean, we know you've been waiting to talk about this.
Oh scene. My God! So this is a scene where Wanda, unfortunately for my dear Amanda LaRusso, goes to number two. She had a good run. But her busting through that hex and dragging out that drone and throwing it at him, and just the sheer badassery and how hachi she is in the scene. This is an amazing scene. And again, this is like probably the most pivotal scene we've seen in this whole show, with the confrontation with Hayward, confrontation with Sword, confrontation with Monica. And Monica, you know, saying, hey, you know, you obviously trust me for all these reasons, but definitely shows here Wanda's going through loss. Wanda's like, I have what I want. And, you know, walks right. I just love that she walks in, throws the drone, gets the guns pointed on Hayward, turns around and goes back in and basically tells them all to fuck off and don't mess with me anymore. Just terrifying, just badass. And I mean, Tim said the rest, but for me, this is like a pivotal scene in this whole entire series so far. I absolutely love this.
Plus the accent comes back.
Yes, plus the hot accent comes back, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scott?
Yeah, I can't really add on. I think what Tim and Sean said were amazing, but I'm just going to add a couple bit. Like they said, it truly goes, like, we went from feeling bad for Wanda to thinking, shit, she may be, like, the, you know, to steal a wrestling term, lead heel on this, because she does have a whole town hostage. She doesn't want to give it up. She then threatens the government agency, which, you know, already was claiming she was a terrorist anyway. And it was a tension filled scene. Like, I thought she was going to kill Hayward, actually, when I watched it the first time, just because, like, she controls everyone. It shows how like she has a town under her control, but can still turn 20 people outside of the town to have their guns turned on Hayward. It shows how limitless her powers really are. Yeah, and it says she says she has all that she never wants now. So what's going to happen if, say, a Vision gets taken away from her, or one of the twins gets taken away from her? What's going to happen with that? So it's interesting to see.
And what happened in Westview when she just stepped outside of its walls, basically? That is a great point about just the level of power that is on display here. She seems like she kept the simulation, so to speak, going while she's doing all this other stuff. I mean, did she just press the pause button and everybody froze in place inside the bubble?
Well, if you look on the monitors, if you look on the monitors in the back, when they, before they run outside, it's, It's bars saying we'll be right back or something.
Okay,
like that.
I didn't catch
stand
that.
By. So, oh, so she paused the show basically.
Interesting.
I don't know if everybody like freezes except for Tommy and Billy maybe because she's not really controlling them.
Did everybody just blip out? I mean,
everybody just stops like a freeze, you know?
But it's been proven she can't control the twins. So I guess the twins were just wandering around looking for their pup, which messed up part of the show.
Just pull a Zach Morris and go timeout.
Yeah.
I think
everybody turned into the scramble vision bars that you would watch on pay-per-view.
I apologize for the save by the bell reference. I was on in the background all weekend.
Okay.
When I was doing working on my Mac. So,
I understood that reference, even if
thank
I'm
you.
Not
I think fan. I think I used a reference that is non-sports that you and Sean can understand. Yes.
Right.
This week. Yes, we had enough with that crazy basketball game that happened with people hitting home runs. Yes.
It's fine. Right. Let people like things, whatever. Right. I'm learning. I'm trying not to be that person.
Hey, in all fairness, we did watch the game last night.
So. We did. We sure did.
We made fun of a lot of things, but that made it enjoyable.
But we didn't we'll make fun of that. People. You know, well, no. not our friends. Anyway.
No.
So, and we'll talk about something we saw during that Super Bowl at the end of the show today. So we get another commercial. This time it is for Lagos brand paper towels to clean up a mess that you make when you spill some juice. Lagos obviously is the reference to Civil War when Wanda, sent Crossbones into the building with his suicide bomb and ended up killing a lot of people unintentionally. And we get back to Westview, where Wanda and the twins are walking through the neighborhood looking for Sparky. Dennis the mailman sees them and asks what the problem is and says that Wanda won't let Sparky get far. They find Agnes holding the dead dog, and she says that he died eating her flower bush leaves. Wanda tells them not to age themselves up to avoid their grief. The twins ask Wanda to fix Sparky, and Agnes is surprised to learn that Wanda can do that. Wanda tells her sons that there are rules in life, and they can't rush aging or reverse death because something are forever, like family. The twins point out that Sparky is family and ask Wanda to bring him back. Vision arrives, and he realizes what happened and hugs his son. So, Sean, what's going on here?
So the commercial. So now I realize with these commercials, maybe – I think they're references to maybe things that have happened in Wanda's life. I mean, we've talked about, is there a significant thing? I think this one kind of peels back that layer based on what happened in Age of Ultron. So that's what it is. This is her commercial breaks of things that have happened in her life. That's where I'm at with that. And if anyone else thinks differently, I'd love to hear it. This dog scene is pretty creepy. And, the dog appears and now the dog's dead. We brought up grief and loss and, here it is with the twins on the grief and loss. But I will tell you, man, I don't believe the dog ate Agnes's azaleas. I almost think Agnes killed the dog because there's just like this creepy, uncomfortable just feeling there that I don't know. There's just something about her eyes. And I just feel like she's lying through her teeth, man. I don't know. And then she tells him that the dead have to stay dead and there's nothing they can do. And and Wanda obviously doesn't believe in that, but there's something with Agnes, and I'm dying to know what her deal is. And she brought up Ralph again earlier. Conveniently, she's holding the dead dog wrapped up. There's something not right with her, and I'm dying to know what that is. But yeah, this is a pretty wrong scene, man. It's just like family. It's like Family Ties After Dark. Just the dead dog. So pretty evil here.
It's like the episode of Growing Pains when Sandy dies in the car accident. Yeah, yes. that's where we're hitting here.
That's why it's a very special episode because of the dead dog. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not a Family Ties aficionado, so was Sandy a grandparent or a pet?
Sandy was on Growing Pains. He was Carol Seaver's boyfriend, played by Matthew Perry, actually, a very young Matthew Perry.
Oh.
And he dies. I think it was he gets hit by a drunk driver or something.
Yeah, something really ass on the back.
Yeah, it was like because I think it was sponsored by MAD. I think Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah,
I think that could have been what was happening there. I'm sure people are yelling at their phones now. If I am incorrect, so I apologize if I am.
So neither a grandparent nor a pet.
No.
But listen, let's just reference any 80s sitcom tropey special episode. This one just happened to have a dead dog killed by Agnes. That's the way I look at it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen some, of course, you know, what do you do after you watch a show like this? You go on and you look for breakdowns and stuff like that. People tune into this show. Can we hopefully that we can, you know, maybe, you know, give them some thoughts and theories and they can, you know, think about, gives them some things for thought. That's why we do this thing. And also we like to talk about stuff like this, but you know, I've seen that, you know, Tim and Sean can elaborate more that Sparky is in the comics in some form may not be this exact interpretation. And also that, you know, he mm-hmm. something, he was born from like a bone of that character that we see with the, there's too
he
much
was
information.
A synthesoid right. dog. Yeah. Well,
he was a eventually. Synthesoid dog in yeah. Vision's later family in Vision.
Yeah. Right? There's too much information in my brain that I don't understand. Yes. So it's like,
they
it's
definitely like, give you a lot of nuggets here, man. Whoever made this show and these series did their research.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we've made a lot of references back to like the original Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries from the early 80s. But they had another more like a maxi series a couple years after that, still in the 80s, that this is borrowed from. That's where the twins were born. Yep. Vision, this is more contemporary, had a series of his own where he had a synthesoid family, which included a dog, a green dog named Sparky, which, I mean, that seems to not be getting as much credit for influencing in smaller ways this WandaVision series as well. But yeah, they a lot of domestic suburban bliss has in very screwed up ways perversions of that, if you will, have followed these characters and has been a big influence on this series. Way too convenient that Agnes is the person to discover Sparky's fate, of course. Certainly seems like she had a hand in that. Telling, I thought, that Wanda tried to turn it into a like a teachable moment. You know, telling the kids at a young age, death is a part of life, essentially. But she kind of stopped short of actually saying it. So it seems like maybe it's a lesson that she needs to learn and accept herself. And she hesitates to, I don't know, go into it as much as she could have, beyond just preventing the kids from running away from it, from aging up. Says that she can't bring back the dead, but I don't know. She's a little noncommittal about all of this was the overall sense I got from it, where she's almost trying to rationalize or maybe bargain getting back to this idea of stages of grief. I don't know. There's almost some hypocrisy in her handling of this.
All right. Scott, what did you think of this part with the unfortunate demise of Sparky?
So I know Sean and Tim think Agnes did it. I honestly think Wanda did it because what the mailman says. Mm. The mailman said that Wanda wouldn't let Sparky get far because he knows she's in control of it.
Oh, crap. Didn't catch that.
I caught it on my second go around when I watched it.
But I feel like Agnes today can do whatever she wants in this show.
Yeah. But I do think Agnes was there. I think she came upon it because she looked interested when they said, you can bring the dead back. And she was like, oh, really? So it seemed like, you know, she was taking notes forever who like the silent hand, the puppeteer is with this. But I do think that Wanda was pissed because what happened. And she couldn't hurt the kids, but she decided to hurt, you know, the kids, and she couldn't hurt the kids directly, but did it indirectly with the killing of the dog because she controls everything in this town. And, you know, and Tim brought up a good point. Wanda being hypocritical, saying like, you can't, like, you got to learn to live with grief when she hasn't, or the show wouldn't even take place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, we probably mentioned that Agnes is playing along. Like Agnes is, if she is this witch that you guys say she is, which I believe you, is she actively doing a spell where she is not, where she is blocking Wanda. If Wanda's trying to control her, maybe, and she's doing what she thinks she needs to do, like she's taking direction from somebody else. Basically, right? We've mentioned
there are moments though where she seems genuinely fearful of Wanda, or surprised, and I think she's still trying to guide and direct events, but she also has a realization that it's like she's totally in over her head now.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes and Wanda both are in over their heads. And Agnes is really thinking like, oh shit, like if I don't play by the rules here, so to speak, if I step out of line, it could really be my ass.
Yeah. All right. So that night, Wanda puts away Sparky's toys. Vision comes and washes his hands and says something to the effect like, not often you get a dog. You get a dog and you bury the dog in the same day. Says that she tells Vision that the boys will be all right, and that Vision tells him that he talked to Norm free of Wanda's oversight and he was in pain. Vision says that Wanda can't control him like everyone else, and then the end credits start to roll as she walks away. He stops her, saying that Wanda only recently became aware that she's creating the sitcom reality. Wanda insists that she doesn't know what Vision is talking about, and he tells her to stop lying. They end up floating in the air, kind of like in the, almost like they're going to have a duel. And Wanda says it's all for them, and Vision should let her handle it. He asks her what is outside of Westview, and she tells him that he doesn't want to know. Vision says she doesn't get to make that choice for him, and Wanda tells him that he's never talked to her this way until now. Vision tells her he can't remember his life, and he doesn't know who he is. Wanda tells him that he's her husband and the twins' father, and that is asked if that's enough. Vision wonders why there are no other children in Westview, and Wanda says that she didn't know how any of it started, and she's not controlling the town. As Vision tells Wanda that's what she's doing is wrong, the doorbell rings. She says that she didn't do it, but Vision says that he doesn't believe her. Wanda answers the door and stares in shock at who is there. Back at the sword base, alarms go off and Darcy checks the broadcast. Vision asks who the visitor is, and Wanda explains that it's her brother Pietro. He comes in, asks if Wanda can give Wanda a hug. Wanda sits there a little bewildered, and Darcy's like, he recasts Pietro. Wanda hugs him as the studio audience cheers, and Pietro wonders who the popsicle is, aka Vision, and the episode ends. So Scott, we get this argument between Wanda and Vision, and a big surprise, a twist of Pietro. And you want to talk about who the actor is and what the significance could be, or it could be a red herring. So go ahead.
I'm going to start with Wanda and Vision arguing, because I thought that was a great scene. And I really thought we were going to see a battle right then and there, because like you said, they both rose up and Vision's pissed because he doesn't remember his past at all, because whatever Wanda did, whoever is working with Wanda erased all that. He just remembers being with her in Westview. And I brought up the kid thing earlier, but it's a little telling that Wanda's saying she's not in control, and with whoever brought this Pietro back is the true one in control, which I think we're going to find out in the next couple of episodes. And when Evan Peters showed up as the Pietro in the Fox X-Men universe, which now we all know that Disney owns the X-Men movie rights and everything, so they're able to bring that in. I lost my mind. I sent in our group chat just a string of F-bombs. I screamed out, holy shit, when they pan back and you see that it's him and not Aaron Johnson, who was the Quicksilver in the MCU universe. This, and I love how Darcy even said, why is Wanda recasting her brother? So it's definitely something going on, and I think it's something with the alarms going off that maybe whoever's pulling this pulled it from a multiverse. I truly believe that is the real, that is Quicksilver, and we're going to start seeing, you know, some more X-Men hopefully come through in the MCU as a whole, not just this. I think Quicksilver is going to be the appetizer. And we're going to start, and in the Spider-Man movie, we're going to see more X-Men, and in the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, we're going to see more X-Men as well. But I truly believe that that's an X-Men, and this is how we get them added, is through Wanda missing her brother, because it had been hinted back in the 70s episode that she had a brother and he was killed by Ultron. And then, you know, and then the brother is brought up today again, and he's in a faraway place, and we see her brother show up. And I didn't think the show could top itself, but this was the best episode so far. It was, it just blew me away for the whole 40 minutes.
Tim?
I guess I already gave my vision theory, and this was just sort of the nail in the coffin, so to speak, in that, I felt like, with Vision acknowledging that he has no recollection of his past, even when he tries to think about his life before Wanda, before coming to Westview, he's just got nothing. And I think that's either due to the nature of this reality that Wanda is in control of and calling the shots in, or the fact that he is, well, dead. He's just reanimated, being puppeted around here, and sort of like, I don't know, sort of like an old computer that doesn't quite work right anymore. Maybe you spilled something on it. Maybe the hard drive doesn't quite spin up. You can get it started, but it doesn't work very well. And Vision is made of parts. He's a machine. Yes, a simulated human, but he's made of parts. He's kind of like a computer. And I don't think he's all there. There's enough that he's recognizable, but this is not our Vision. And I think they're setting us up here for a real tragic fall. Going into this series, I kind of hung my hopes on the idea that this would be the vehicle that brings Vision back, that resurrects him, puts him back into play as a character. I think if anything now, it's probably going to be a farewell. I don't know that anybody comes out of this feeling good at the end of the day.
He's dead.
Yeah, including us as the audience. They're winding up to break our hearts, I think, here. And with those kids, I don't have a good feeling all around. But I'm totally on board for the ride. As far as this very special guest star at the end here, big bombshell that they dropped there, certainly. I kind of think they're fucking with us. Yeah, this guy might have been plucked out of the larger multiverse. He may be a Quicksilver. I don't think at the end of the day that they will confirm one way or another that he is the Fox X-Men Quicksilver. And I really hope they don't do that. I just don't want that to be the way that they just introduce the quote-unquote X-Men characters and X-Men world into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I don't want it to just be they exist side by side in this reality, and we just drop them. Like, to me, that completely undermines the appeal and the themes and, frankly, everything about the X-Men that I love. So that comes with a whole lot of baggage that I don't really want to get into. And I mean, or it could be that this is not even a multiversal event. Maybe this is like just a guy that Evan Peters is playing that is like a wink and a nod to the audience, but that she has, as Darcy said, recast as her dead brother. I don't know. I just think they're pulling the wool over our eyes in some form or fashion. I don't think they do that much of a bait and switch, but I don't think it's as cut and dry as, oh, it's the Fox X-Men Quicksilver. Just for so many reasons, other than just my own personal reservations, that kind of doesn't work and just doesn't hold up to scrutiny. I mean, you sit there, it's one of those refrigerator moments where in the moment it's a big deal. But then later on, as you kind of mull it over in your brain, you go, well, wait, how are they even like the same character? This is a Quicksilver in the X-Men movies that is decades older, that his powers totally work differently, which that's a minor detail, but like, did they establish he even has a sister in those movies? Like, they have totally, completely different parents. It doesn't really track that they could even be like map onto the same character just in a different reality. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that's getting into the weeds of it, but it kind of falls apart if you think about it for a couple seconds, really.
Yeah, it's mind blowing. He comes in kind of like Uncle Jesse, Nick Mallory's boyfriend, Fonz, like kind of like a mixture of that, like a little attitude there. So Sean, what are your thoughts on the end of this episode?
So I'll with the Wanda Vision thing again, continue unravel, and Vision starting to see. I love Vision saying, I don't know who I am. So this basically tells you that he doesn't remember anything that's happened prior to being in this little bubble. So, yeah, I think Tim's right. I think we're heading for a real tragedy or a real ending here that's going to not bode well. So Evan Peters and showing up as Pietro. It's very clear to me that when they answer the door, one, Wanda, or obviously Vision wouldn't know who he is because he doesn't remember anything. Anything to begin with, but Wanda seems stunned. I don't think Wanda knows who he is either. And I think Tim's right. I think Marvel's real good at sleight of hand. I don't think Marvel will be as simple as saying, hey, this is how we're going to bring him in. We're going to bring him in as Quicksilver and have him show up in WandaVision. And oh, look, here's the X-Men. I think there's going to be more involved in that. I think this is a ruse on their part. My ongoing theory continues to be that the alarms went off, and I think that's because some kind of entity or someone entered the hex, maybe, that set that off. It doesn't necessarily mean he's Pietro. It could mean he's the actual – if I wanted to lay down my comicbook.com theory, he's Ralph. That's going to be my theory, that he is this Ralph person. And Evan Peters is pretty much a dick in everything he's in, and he looks like a dick. He's really good as a heel in the shows he's on. If you watch an American Horror Story, he's always good as a heel. I totally think that's where they're going with this guy. I don't think he's Quicksilver whatsoever, and that's my personal opinion. I think it's sleight of hand being done by Marvel. I'm real curious to see where it goes, and it's cool that he's on here, and it created a big oh shit moment. To quote Tim, I had to change my underwear probably 5 times in that moment because it was unexpected. But, yeah, there's just got to be more to this. Marvel's smarter than bringing the X-Men into this. Now, here's what throws me off. And I'm going back to the last Spider-Man movie that took place 5 years after, and they brought back the original J. Jonah Jameson from the old Spider-Man movies.
No, I think it's 8 months after this, I think.
It's 8 months after this show, but they still...
Yeah.
So that takes place after this happens, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's very clear J. Jonah Jameson is in that movie. So this could very well be Quicksilver, and this could be the first inkling we see of the multiverse. So that's what throws me off, is that goddamn scene in Spider-Man. Because
I don't think that's anything other than reusing the same actor because he was so good.
See, I disagree. I totally disagree because
I agree with Tim.
I disagree because they're bringing back characters from those old Spider-Man movies into the Marvel universe. They're bringing back Jamie Foxx. They're bringing back. They're bringing back all these characters that were in those Tobey Maguire and the other guy, Garfield movies. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, there's something going on, but I'm still going to stand firm on my opinion that this is not Quicksilver. That's what I'm going.
And that J. Jonah Jameson actually was kind of like the J. Jonah Jameson that's in the Spider-Man video game that was on the PlayStation.
That's what I'm saying. That was done on purpose for a reason, and not just to have the same character in the movie or the same actor. So that's where I'm at.
It's just weird because, I mean, the Jameson from the Raimi Spider-Man movies was more of a traditional, like, comics JJ. And this guy was like a you know, an InfoWars version of Jameson.
Yes.
So, like, I don't think he could be, like, the same character as he was from the Raimi movies. That's why.
Or he could be a multiverse one from a different multiverse, is what I'm saying.
Different one altogether.
Yes.
I kind of
hate
like,
this multiverse. Could be a different Quicksilver, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly want you to think that it's the X-Men, the Fox X-Men Quicksilver.
There's no way in hell it is.
I just don't think. For it's too obvious. Reasons.
It's way too obvious.
Well, and it just also doesn't really work.
What do you think about my theory that it could be Ralph?
So, are you saying, are you going whole hog on
I'm not going whole hog on that yet.
On Ralph
Mephisto. I figure they would need a bigger actor for Mephisto than Evan Peters in my mind.
Wait, are you saying Ralph entered the...
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
Agnes I think Agnes is the guide of the hex. He controlled it from outside the hex, and in this moment, he went into it. That's why we haven't seen.
Here's what I'll say. I think that the outside force, whether that's Mephisto, which I think it could be, and I don't know that the appearance of Evan Peters. Necessarily confirms one way or another. Like Mephisto could appear in whatever form he wants, right? There could be, you know, a guy in makeup who appears as a more traditional version, which
it could be fully CG,
any number of insane directions they want to go with that. If in fact that's who it is, I mean, could be Mephisto, could be Dormammu, could be. I actually Googled after you talked about the tiger creature with the connection to Doctor Strange, Hogoth or Hogoth,
which would be wrong because isn't that the name of the lawyer in Jessica Jones?
Hogarth. It is a little too similar. Feels like.
I was gonna say like that sounds familiar.
But yeah, I mean, there truly is this mystical entity that takes the form of a tiger, which I had never heard of this dude with connections to Doctor Strange, which, it may just be one of those visual cues.
That seems too far out there to me.
It does. You know, it does seem too far out there.
They said it could be Chthon also.
Chthon.
That also seems too far out for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Bottom line is, whoever is the entity behind the curtain, there's something else. There are greater forces at work, and Wanda's statement that she did not know how this started was a little bit redemptive for me, where I was like, okay, I'm a little bit back on board with her now. That she doesn't know how it started, that means she probably doesn't know that all these people are in terrible agony and suffering. She knows that she doesn't want it to stop. She knows she has some degree of control and that she desires to keep this thing spinning. But she doesn't know that people are hurting, I don't think. And if she did, I do believe that would give her pause, to say the least. So somehow or another, this thing got going, maybe amped up her powers. Perhaps she struck a deal of some sort that said, hey, you can have what you want, which is a life, a quiet domestic life with Vision. You can even have your brother back if you give me what I want. Now, that sounds like kind of a Mephisto thing to do, right?
Yep.
To extend this gift that comes with a price. Now, we don't know what that price is. Maybe these children, maybe, you know, the continual suffering of this entire town. I said before that maybe that's what's powering this thing or empowering someone. That could feed into it. I also have I've been going forth on this idea that if we are dealing with multiverses and warping reality and dimensional walls and da da da. Maybe like Wanda has done something to tear down these walls between dimension, between different dimensions, like has blown a hole in the multiverse, essentially. Mm-hmm. So why would that be significant? Well, it's significant if there's someone who is imprisoned in some way and is trying to get out. And I don't know, I feel like we kind of saw that with Dormammu in the original, in the first Doctor Strange movie. So if they have manipulated or directed events, realized that Wanda could do this, maybe they've steered her in a direction where she has used her powers to, you know, as I said, blow that hole in reality so that they could escape. Either way, you know, she's being manipulated and gaslit by somebody. And I mean, these are not mutually exclusive ideas. I mean, both could be true that, hey, you, I'll give you this. You can have your fantasy world, your own little pocket dimension corner of reality if I can get out. So maybe both are true.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to, it's one of those things where this is the type of show that inspires and really invites these types of, this type of speculation and fan theories are going to abound. And I just don't want to hang my hat on anyone in particular. I don't want to be disappointed because my own personal, like, oh, well, they didn't do it this way, so it sucks. You know, I'm trying to still keep an open minded while still be speculative because it's fun to do that.
Yeah, I'll still be open minded. I'm just still going with the theory, and I still. You heard in interviews that there's some kind of Luke Skywalker moment coming up. I think a lot of people are going to think it's what we got this week. I still think there's still something coming.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, final thoughts, and I was going to mention about that. That's been a lot, talked about a lot, that there's going to be a Spider-Man, a Luke Skywalker-esque moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been a lot of comparisons to Magneto and things that have happened with the turning of the guns and stuff, something that Magneto had done.
Oh, yeah, the wave of the hand. She's Magneto.
Yeah, Wanda waves her hands in a funny way, so Magneto's definitely going to show up. No.
That one was ridiculous, but anyway.
Look, we have reached, I feel like, ourselves enough that I can't go in too hard on those guys, but it did. It was like a huge jump to say, okay, because. She moved her hands around in a way that Magneto did in a scene that was broadly reminiscent of a thing he did in a movie 20 years ago.
Well, she blinked her eyes, and we translated it into Morse code. And
yeah, I mean, it gets...
It's like I said in our chat, if Wanda takes a dump, that means Mr. Hanky's coming as the big guy. That's,
you know,
anyway.
Stories! Science fiction! About creatures coming down from other planets.
I don't like this is like the Luke Skywalker thing at the end of The Mandalorian was great, and I hope it doesn't turn into a gimmick that Disney uses. Like I really hope we don't get like, oh my God, like so and so showed up at the last, because I feel I don't want that being done.
I don't think it's going to be like a dead Tony Stark or anything. I think it's going to be something that's going to lead to probably where we're going to go with the Doctor Strange movie or something that's connected to another Marvel show. I don't think it's going to be like a Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, but I just don't want it being like, oh, we get to the last episode. Oh, what is this? Someone.
Oh, that's going to happen.
Well, actually, if you look at the interview and the question that was asked, it was sort of, I don't know, I must feel like it was a bit of a leading question. It wasn't Elizabeth Olsen going, oh my God, there's a fucking Luke Skywalker moment. It's going to blow everybody's minds. And as I recall, it was the interviewing saying like, hey, is there anything like that coming up? And she was sort of like, well, yeah, cause what are you going to say? And I don't know. I could see that being the Evan Peters deal that we got in this episode. I mean, that kind of blew people's minds, blew my mind. But we are only 5 episodes in, got a ways to go. If it's something like they bring in Doctor Strange, I kind of feel like the Evan Peters appearance would be a bigger deal than a Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I feel like Doctor Strange is inevitable.
So, I mean, if that's what it's going to be, and you know, if that's what she was referring to, I think people are going to be let down, even though it makes all the sense in the world. You know, that doesn't feel as like earth shattering as Luke Skywalker or
like Magneto
from an entirely different. Yeah, like if it was Magneto, then yes, that would be on par with.
What Magneto would you want? Would you want Ian McKellen?
Ian McKellen. He's like dead almost.
I wasn't sure.
It could be the one from the movies. It could be. I mean, Fassbender? I guess they could age him up enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name. Thank you.
Fassbender. Which I'd be okay with. He was a pretty decent Magneto, I thought.
I like his Magneto. But here again, if all we're doing is, oh, well, you loved him in the X-Men movies. Now they're the same characters in the MCU. Like,
yeah.
I'm gonna.
It should be Bova. If it's Bova, I'll mark out.
It's gonna be.
Just need Deadpool to run down. What are we doing, people?
Yep, see, this is what happens when we go down this freaking path.
All right, I know. We've talked a lot, and we've gone on probably at least more than twice the length of the actual episode. But
this is our longest one yet.
but we're gonna one more thing to talk about. So during the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. They dropped a second trailer, and the full trailer, you can find it on Disney Plus or on YouTube for the next series, which I believe we're going to get a 2-week break, because I believe this WandaVision ends on March 5th and Falcon and the Winter Soldier begins on March 19th. So let's go around. I assume everybody has seen it, and I can read a breakdown if you like. To kind of give thoughts, because there are some things in there that I don't know. And they're saying, everybody's saying that WandaVision could lead to this. And then now this can lead to, Secret Wars and all this other stuff, because there was some Skrull imagery in this thing and Baron Zemo and all stuff. A lot going on in this. And I was pumped already for this show, but let's kind of go around, and I could just break out little moments. Like, it begins with Sam and Bucky in a room with a counselor. She asks Bucky why Sam aggravates him. And then it cuts to a scene where we have seen Sam jumping out of an airplane while Bucky complains of lack of a plan. Then we go to the fictional city of Madripoor, where Baron Zemo begins his ominous voiceover. We get a look at the Hightown area.
I mean, it probably is, but I feel like it's a little wankish to say.
It's not Madripoor?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we got a caption pop up. I mean, at the end of the day, it was a 2-minute trailer. It gave us snippets of things that, what you can probably draw a through line there to certain things. But I feel like people are jumping to wild conclusions already based on.
I think they are, because they announced that a part of the show was going to take place there, Tim.
So it probably is, but I think it's a bit much to say, well, this is definitely Madrip, like.
There's a shiny boat in the water, and
I think some of the takeaways beyond, like, the things that we know, like, we know who Falcon is, we know who Winter Soldier is, we know who Baron Zemo, like, everything else is pretty speculative, and to say that it's definitely this or that, it feels kind of smug to me. Some
it's
going
to lead to the Thunderbolts and Songbirds in it. And
some of the takes are a little bit much.
Flag Smasher.
Flag Smasher.
And I mean, look, Jesus, they're probably Christ. Right. They're probably right about, again, it probably is Madripoor. It probably is whatever else. But I don't know. To say for sure at this stage that it is this or that is like, come on. We've had a 2-minute preview.
They showed Madripoor. That means Wolverine's going to show up, because he used to run that place. That's where they're going to. Yeah, I think it's almost too hard to speculate. For me, I look at it as going to be a good kind of buddy kind of thing. Like, it definitely looks like it's going to be funny. Definitely looks like it's almost like a Lethal Weapon with superheroes, is kind of the way I took away from it.
Asshole. Took the words out of my mouth.
Well, Because I knew you were going there, so I beat you. It's a great Christmas. That's kind of how I viewed it. If I just want to sum it up, think a Marvel superhero show, Lethal
Weapon. It's going to be a romantic comedy for sure.
Because it's
a bromance. That makes a romantic comedy.
Oh, Jesus.
And I do like the Baron Zemo that they actually bring the mask in, that the mask is there. So I'm curious to see how that plays out, too.
I'll just add my little two cents. I really enjoyed the trailer. I watched the extended one last night. I did like that they brought back Sharon Carter. I thought she was underused in the movies, so it looks like she's going to get some shine now. And I loved Bucky and Falcon's one-liners to each other in the movies, and looks like they're going full hog on that with the show, which I'm perfect with. I think they have great chemistry. I just can't wait for it.
Plus, we have a U.S. agent who I know nothing about the character. I just know that he's kind of like a great value Captain America, from what I understand.
John Walker. He's kind of a dick.
Dickhead. Yeah. He's a
dickhead. Yeah.
I think they're going to – here's me getting speculative.
See? It's unavoidable.
It is. But I'm not saying – I'm not going to go, well, you see, and mansplain it to you like some of these sites do. I'm under the impression that, Cap, we know, gave the shield to Sam with his blessing, said basically, here you go. You're going to be the flag bearer now. And Bucky seemed rather okay with that at the time. Government probably has other ideas. And if we're taking a page out of the comics, they're going to come back with their own Captain America, which was back in the 80s, John Walker, U.S. agent. And he was just a huge dickhead who ended up being rather unhinged and had to be taken down. So I am and we know that that character, they've confirmed that that character is going to be in the show, played by, who is it?
Wyatt Russell.
Wyatt Russell. Who I kind of like.
He's kind of like a younger Owen Wilson almost, I guess.
I could totally
great
see
value, Kurt.
I could totally see him playing just that original comics version of U.S. Agent. So I am looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to Bucky having an actual personality. I think is going to be great. And it's unavoidable in a television show, right? Like, if we're thinking it's going to be a buddy cop sort of drama, action drama, they've got to flesh out his character. Like, he's been a very wooden sort of character throughout all of his, like, by necessity, just based on the plots of the movies he's appeared in. But actually getting a sense of who he is as a character is what I'm really looking forward to. Because I don't think we've really had that so far, other than, he's Steve's best friend or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Any last thoughts on the Falcon Winter Soldier trailer, guys?
I can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah,
I'm excited. It's 2 weeks after WandaVision, and then
it's
a week or two, but then when it leads six episodes, and it leads into Loki, which is in May after that, and then Black Widow. So it's just constant, which I love that we're gonna get constant Marvel stuff.
Yeah, I just hope it's not too much of a good thing.
we went a long time without it, so I love every minute of it.
Yeah. So. I know. You know what I'm going to love every minute of? Breaking down every episode with you, fine gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So, all right, so we're going to finally wrap up this episode of Pop Goes to the Couch. It was all great stuff. You know, look, there's a lot going on in these things. And for anybody, look, if you go on YouTube or anything like that and you're like, oh, look at this breakdown of this episode, and it's 2 hours of somebody on YouTube breaking down every Easter egg, there's literally 15, 20 minute videos of people breaking down the trailer. Mm-hmm. So that happens. There's a lot going on. There's a lot that you want to talk about and you perceive and you see these little things. We joke about some of it, but some of it is there meant to either mess with you or it's legit going to get a breadcrumb. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about. And, you know, we're in the back half now of the season. Now we've watched 5 episodes. We have 4 more to go. So as much as, you know, I want to find out everything, like, I'm sad. I'm, like, starting to get, like, oh, my God, WandaVision is probably going to be a one-and-done series. So it's like,
right,
I just, right, I don't want to leave this story, but it's going to come to its conclusion very soon. So I'm excited. I have very mixed emotions.
And I'm sorry, I know we're trying to wrap up here. Wasn't this supposed to come after Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Initially, yes, it was.
Originally?
Well, we would have seen Black Widow, like, you know, almost a year ago at this point.
Yeah, I mean, true.
But Black Widow takes place in the past.
Well, yes, but I think it's going to either close some loops or give us some backstory that we didn't know that leads into something now. I don't know. I'm losing my mind. Like I said in the, like we talk about in our little chat, I'm like Pinto when they're smoking weed with Donald Sutherland in Animal House. Like, this is blowing my mind. This is too much. Can I buy some pot from you? So, all right. So, but that's going to finally wrap up Pop Goes to the Couch WandaVision Episode 5 on this very special episode. So, for Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Capel, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us this week. We can't wait to talk about this next week. So hopefully we'll see you back here. Take care.